You're listening to the After Hours Podcast. My name's Justin. I'll be joined on this pod by Eric and Giorgio. And in this pod, we'll be having a conversation about this past week's sermon and thinking about how that sermon applies to our lives as we seek to be transformed by God's grace into faithful servants of all. Thanks for being here.
Welcome back to After Hours. I am here with Giorgio, who preached this Sunday.
Hey, y'all.
On greed. And so, yes, we've been kind of walking through the seven deadly sins, the glittering vices. This week's vice was greed. And so I want to start, G, just talking a little bit about putting the sermon together. So why don't you walk us through just a little bit of your process this week and how that kind of went down for you?
Well, I've preached on the passage before, but not fully orienting towards it being a deadly sin. And I preached on Luke 16 before, where he does God and mammon. And so I literally like stuck both sermons in one document and then just started cutting and trying to figure out what I wanted to say about those things. I mean, I think the interaction with the brother and the parable are just exquisite pastoral presence from Jesus. But the reason I added Luke 16 into it was because of Against the Machine, which you recommended to me, and I mentioned in my little montage and then throughout the sermon, that this addiction to / God of growth, progress, I wanted to make sure that this is one of the deadly sins that Jesus actually names as a personified reality.
Yeah.
Like it acts on us in a different way. They all act on us. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that Jesus is explicit that this one comes after us, which is why I said that, you know, guard against this. You know, when Jesus says that, I was like, put up your dukes, because there is you can't just go down the lazy river on this one. Mm-hmm. Even the lazy river of kind of like general righteousness. Mm-hmm. It's coming after you. And so, yeah. And then, of course, Madame Blueberry and Gordon Gekko, those are all like part of my life, either as a parent or growing up as a, you know, the kid who was born in 1972, that those were like huge parts of, yeah, of how we orient towards greed. Yeah, it's really interesting. Like I did most of my sermon writing was trying to figure out what to delete, mm-hmm, you know, because I had so much material.
Right.
The whole new added material of Against the Machine, mm-hmm, was like, okay, it was all in the rewriting, and orienting towards those things. So
the bank, you know, you had, I think several different like pointed moments. I thought the quote you chose from Against the Machine was a banger. But when you got to the place where you kind of started to, you pulled from another pastor, I was, mm-hmm, in my head trying to think of who that pastor was.
It's John Harrelson. Okay. I'll give him credit for it. Okay.
So you pulled from John's thing. Mm-hmm. And I really thought like that was like a very, that was a very clever way to talk about it. So, you know, what hit you with that as you thought about bringing that in?
So I was trying to find a place for that. Mm-hmm. And I ended up putting it towards the application side, mm-hmm, of things, yeah, and not explaining mammon. Mm-hmm. But because it was so explicit about how mammon works, and what I loved about that pastorally from him to his congregation was that it's like, oh no, this is like a fully developed theology, mm-hmm, that it has these promises, it has these demands, it offers,
yeah, I thought that was really
an
good
eschatology.
Yeah, yeah. That eschatology.
The eschatology is, you're going to, I added the second or third wife.
Yeah, I thought that was the strong, like for me, the listener, it might not have been for everybody else, yeah, but for me, the listener, I thought that was like, man, that was a very vivid, pointed moment. Like, because that is what we're being offered.
Absolutely.
It's the John Piper Shells, by the way. Like, I don't know if you know this.
No, I don't know.
Yeah. No, this is like Piper's most famous sermon.
Oh, is it?
He delivered it, I think it was at One Day. But he gives this whole image of a retired couple spending their later years at the beach,
right,
looking for shells.
Right.
And, you know, in Piper's form, he was like, he pretty much, like, the emperor has no clothes here. Like, what a wasted life. You know, right. This is his Don't Waste Your Life sermon.
Yeah.
And, like, it hinted at that for me,
yeah.
like, as a listener. But I just thought that, like, that eschatology piece, like,
yeah.
like, you walk through what greed offers us, what mammon, the machine, offers right. us. And, like, it is a religion. Hello. Like,
yes.
it is, we are being invited into, this is our religion.
Yes. And it's what we live and swim in, and we don't even know how it's affecting us. And I got like 50 pages left in Against the Machine, and it's only proving the point more. Mm. But yeah, it is, we don't even, we can't even be cognizant of the ways it affects us. Mm. And it happens for those of us in ministry, figuring out what retirement's going to look like and all the things. Do we get, like, there are side gigs we could get that could, like, keep income coming. There are, you know, there's just, it's, and I imagine you all and the rest of the world have all those same things. Mm-hmm. Or it's grind, grind, grind so that you have enough in your storage units to be able to, like, run on that until, or depending on your desires, until your grandkids are okay, or your kids are okay, or just you're okay. Like it really is. I mean, it's a haunting and humbling thing to realize that mammon is real and it's a god, and it requires a lot. And
yeah, it requires a lot.
It requires a lot, right. And it's just really hard.
But it also gives you it also speaks to your imagination and to your desires. So Jamie Smith, like it is something that we practice that is aiming our heart towards a certain vision of the good life. And that vision of the good life could be that retirement scene.
Right.
And it could be shells, and it could be any other number of things. I get to travel and be near my family.
Right, right.
Or I get to host them at a, you know, beach house every year.
Right.
Or, you know, there's this vision of what will be make life good, meaningful, powerful. And greed speaks to acquiring that. And I thought we could, like, kind of nuance this out a little bit. Before I do that, was there anything as you, like, went through the sermon that, like, just spoke to you personally? This is a vulnerable question, listeners. So,
I remember when I was in seminary, and Amanda and I were both in seminary, and I was working part-time, going to school full-time. She was going to school part-time and working full-time. And I remember doing our taxes, since we're in that time of year. And I remember, if I ever could just make $43,000 a year,
I'd be happy.
I wouldn't be utterly content.
Yeah.
Now, put that with inflation, so it's 60 or 65 or whatever it
or
is
80.
Now with inflation. Well, now it's at 8% every year. So, you know, no matter what.
Yeah.
I remember going, yes, this is what contentment would be. Mm-hmm. And it was a lie from mammon. Mm-hmm. You know, I underestimated both my appetites, and I was naive about what things cost too. I mean, I'm just be real honest. But I think that and it is a slippery slope. And slippery slope arguments are only legitimate if they're proven to slip. And it is a slippery slope in my life, and I think it's a slippery slope in everyone's life.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think it's that progress, it's that more, it's that upgrade this or upgrade that, whether it's a computer or a spouse or a vacation place or, I mean, I still think I'm naive about it. And I kind of got my dukes up on this stuff, but it is still such a lure. It's the siren song that it's just everywhere, and it is very powerful.
Very powerful, very hard to resist, very easy to swim in. Leading into the week, I'm trying to do some reading alongside each of these things, and the thing that hit me is my incessant belief in scarcity. Hmm. So I have a scarcity mindset when it comes to, as a New Mexican, like it's kind of embedded into our DNA.
That's why y'all are hustlers.
Yeah. That the world is, you know, what you're going to get is scarce. And also embeds into my own family story, which is, are you going to show up for me in the way that I need, need you to show up? And so I kept thinking about how I feel in my body when someone grabs the seat I want to sit in. Mm. Like just a simple thing like that.
Right.
Like there isn't enough good seats.
Right.
And I feel my heart quicken that I might not get the seat I want in the room. Mm. Or if someone's serving food at some party or event, and I'm like, I really like that food.
Yeah.
Is there going to be enough for me?
Right.
And so where that turns into greed, right, is like you become greedy for the thing.
Right.
And you position yourself to get what you want, irregardless of the people who come behind you. Now, of course, we're all good Southerners.
Yeah,
here,
you're all posturing. Right? You're all posturing in the right way.
I'm not going to take too much on my plate, too much on my plate. But there is this like view of scarcity that causes me to like have to secure things.
Right.
And be greedy in that preserving. Right. And so you didn't talk about that in your sermon, but that's what I was thinking on leading up to the week and going, oh yeah, that is definitely a place where.
Yeah. I think mine is, I probably have a view of the give and take away, but my issue is not that I don't struggle with that. I'm like, well then I just need to have enough to go get what I want whenever I want it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. It's more like I don't mind giving money away. I don't mind doing all that stuff. I might do it in a dumb way that's probably not helpful for my finances, but
this is the Enneagram 7.
Yeah.
Way of thinking about the world is like, I don't want to be trapped.
Right.
So I want to have what I need to do, what I want, when I want.
When you want.
I'm greedy in that sense of like, I'm going to keep enough aside for myself to make sure I always have that security.
Right.
To get what I want, when I want. Because again, to my story, I don't know if you're going to be able to show up for me and give me what I want. Right. And I apply that to God as well.
Of course. Like, yeah. And mine's more like abundance everywhere and everyone should get everything. But it doesn't have a tamp on it. Mm. Is like, do we live in a real world with real struggles with real, you know what I mean? Like
certain limits
of those things. Like the answer sometimes is just no. And you have to do without. So I do that both in giving, but also in myself and my family, you know, and that's why I said, check your checking account. And if you can trust somebody, let them check your checking account, because you're going to figure out what you actually long for and what your theology of money is. Mm. And no one's going to get it right. The question is, how do I grow in that? You know, because I mean, I've told people in our church, you're way too stingy. You need to come up off those purse strings. And there are other people I'm like, maybe you shouldn't do that. You know, it's not, I don't think we have a formula for it. That's one thing I did cut out.
Yeah.
I cut out the, like I had in there, I will not tell you what your budget should be because that creates its own set of realities that keep you from God and the people you're dealing with. Mm. And if I just tell you what it is, I mean, this is the worst thing about talking about tithing is that 10% then becomes this thing where you're like, well, now I've hit the mark, so mm-hmm. then I can do whatever else I want mm-hmm. with my money. That mm-hmm. doesn't work. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Whatever. Mm-hmm. Or that's why when they say, is it off of gross or take home? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, it's the wrong question. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what is, this is all to be stewarded for the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And it's not, yeah. So, yeah, I think, and not the self. So it's, I mean, it's super hard. It's mammon, it's pervasive, and it's our God. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did say, I think one of the other parts I loved about the sermon is that one in the second service, I said, this is the American dream. Mm-hmm. What happened to the rich man with the fields that had the abundant harvest was the American dream.
Mm-hmm. So, in light of some of the American dream, and that we live in this cycle that says everything must grow, mm-hmm. right? So the stock market must continue to grow.
Right.
Our technological advancements must continue to grow. Our acquiescence of companies, properties, whatever that is, we have this on any budget, home budget has some level of territories that you're seeking to acquire for yourself. Right. So it could be Pokemon cards,
right?
Right. Like it's scaled to every household, right. But, and the idea is that we have to continue to grow. And this then applies to spiritual things. Parenting, our family systems, mm-hmm. and marriages, our church.
So, keep going. Our state, geopolitical, like, I mean, it's everything.
Right. Winston-Salem, the Piedmont right. Triad, like right. everything has to continue to grow. Right. And so we live in this like
grow constant
cycle. Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah. So if you don't grow, it's not just that you're not keeping up, you're falling behind.
Right.
Like, and you are dying. So into that space of the water we swim in, this total like need for growth, the temptation then is like, okay, so how can I control like the things
the growth
so
curve.
That we
yeah.
grow?
Yeah.
And that's what we're living in as a society, right? So everything is about controlling the markets, controlling resources, natural and otherwise, so that we are ensuring our future growth and recessions, going backwards feels like the worst thing ever, right?
Right.
Like, how does it feel? Like, okay, so you know, if you don't know anything, if you can't see Giorgio here, but Giorgio is this svelte man, looking great, handsome, but like, this has been a journey. This is like whenever anybody takes on the battle of like losing pounds, like it is hard work, requires lots of like grief and setbacks, and it's just a thing. So like you have a setback on the scale.
Right.
Like how does that feel in your body?
Yeah, well, it feels like a death.
Yes.
It feels like, and the temptation is either, well, mostly for me, it is all of this is useless.
Yeah.
I shouldn't try anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Where's the cake?
If
Whippo, give me some cake, man.
Right, right. If I can't run a marathon, yeah. then why am I even running?
Yeah.
Well, if I can't lift, like, I mean, I deadlifted a bunch of weight one time. And I'm like, I'm not probably 3/4 of the way there to be able to do that now. And so why would I even do any exercise? Mm. And I, as a deep temptation for me, the other is.
So it's cynicism. It's
despair,
like despair, yeah, like, you know, and then you're like avoidant, yeah. like, okay, I'm out.
But, yeah. And then yeah. you go to Ecclesiastes and then justify it with yeah. everything is meaningless.
Yeah, that's right.
Because right? Right. every heretic has his verse, uh-huh. and I've got mine uh-huh. personally. Uh-huh. But the other option is what you have to do is get that nose to the grindstone right now.
Yep.
And you got to do it exactly right. how you're imagining control, it in your head. Baby. That's the control yeah. piece. Yeah. And by the way, despair is a form of control.
Correct. Yeah.
It's just saying, I am I am going to control this by not trying. Mm-hmm. It is an act.
I'm going to control my emotional level of like involvement in this by like, okay, I'm just going to,
I'm not
like
going to fight care. Anymore. I don't yeah. care. Yeah. Whatever.
Whatever.
It's meh, you know? Yeah. And so then the other option is like, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to get on the grindstone. I'm going to knock it out. And I'm not saying that there aren't, that's not part of like growing in a good way, in sanctification kind of way. It's hard and it causes, you have to sacrifice, but what are you sacrificing for? And what are you orienting towards?
Right. So the question I want to lead us mm-hmm. to is like, okay, what do we get of God when there is recess?
Oh man, that's where the magic can happen.
Right.
That's right. Where you're
so,
like, oh.
So again, like if we just to frame of reference this for all of us, like in a culture that does not accept anything but growth, both in the church and outside of it, when there's recession, the temptation is, oh man, I've blown it.
Right.
I'm such a loser. I can't get my crap together. Right. Like we have all sorts of mantras that then we pronounce to ourselves.
Right.
But what if like,
it's that's, invitation.
That's where
yeah.
that's where God is.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's exactly right. I mean,
if Mammon is the God of growth and excess and more, then by nature God is the God of.
Well, I think it's symbiotic.
It is symbiotic.
It is growth.
But I don't want to take the edge off of the of the
it's
proof.
It's also fasting
of the proof here.
Yeah, yeah.
Like. There's I think a greater proof
yeah.
in the realization that what if God is again with the least,
mm-hmm.
the last, in a different sort of way, where you get more of God,
yeah,
in these places of recession and loss, that seems to like fit with like even with King's North like. You know, and this is the book we've been reading.
Yeah, King's North is Against the Machine.
You know, he's the author of Against the Machine, where he would say, like, you know, the machine is all about growth.
Mm.
And that has so many different, like, veins that pop out from this. But it's Frankenstein. Like,
yeah, totally.
It's the monster. It's the machine. And that the only way, you know, he says this at one point, like, but what if the cross is true.
Right.
Like, what if it's really about dying, losing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that seems to go really in the face of the machine. And so if that's true, like, recession and loss, then how does that speak to our greedy nature?
Well, I'll answer it first with one statement and then try to answer it more specifically. One of my best friends says that in order to orient toward the way of Jesus, the prioritization of the poor is the central thing we needed to do. And that's a pretty radical statement.
Right.
But what he's getting at is what you're talking about mm-hmm. in terms of finding space and place where God works in those places and where you can work in those places, not to rescue, but to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they'll be able to do this, but I really want to hear from Iranian Christians right now. I want to hear from and have, that's a little more available, but like, you know, there was we talked about the church getting like kind of, protested against in Minneapolis, but there were two churches in Charlotte that, that the government came in and I want to hear from those pastors.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that they're, I once did a rabbit hole where religious engagement or Christian engagement was mapped on to socioeconomics. and Christian engagement was so much higher among the poor. Mm-hmm. And this was like Charlotte, regional Charlotte area. But we have so much to learn mm-hmm. about how to fight off mammon when mammon is acting on them in a negative way versus acting on us in a positive way. Mm-hmm. This is why we're doing the poverty simulation. Like, you know, like it's just like, what's it feel like? Mm-hmm. It's really expensive to be poor. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just those kinds of things and the priorities of the kingdom, which is what Jesus promises at the end of the passage that I didn't read all of it for, is that I've given you the whole kingdom. And I just think poor, marginalized, least and last get that better than we do.
Yeah.
And we just have a lot to learn about God.
They get it from a few different angles. Well, one, there's a managing of things that's certainly heavy and hard mm-hmm. for one that is poor. But they don't have the same level of stuff to manage.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah, like, more money, more problems.
Right. So so there's a simpler way of like being animated in the world. Maybe that simpler way is still really hard.
Right, right, right.
Right. Like I'm an hourly, like I need help assistance from the government. So I have to take off from work to go down to the assistance. So I need WIC.
Right. Or I got 2 weeks of snow days.
Yep.
And I can't work because my kids are home.
Right.
So like, I mean, it's just like, that's a big deal. That's a half month's wages when you're willing paycheck to paycheck. Right.
So that's really hard. So that don't mishear that. Like there's a simplicity of stuff that less things that you're managing out there for the future.
You're not worried about your 529.
There's a presence that you're living in each day of your life. And there is a acceptance of the Lord's Prayer invitation
of daily bread
that is real and also like symbiotic in the sense of like you're needy, you feel your need, mm-hmm. like you feel it both in your community when mm-hmm. like you have your kids and we all chip in together to help take care of them mm-hmm. in some ways, whereas versus paying some outsider to come in and be mm-hmm. at our house and watch our kids, you feel it in like needs being met and within your space and frame of reference, and you're not meeting those needs on your own. And perhaps that opens you up to your need of God, mm-hmm. that God is one who meets us in our places of need and mm-hmm. wants us to be dependent. And so what happens is our wealth and our stuff, we manage our stuff. There's something we have to do about our stuff, but we don't have need in the same way.
That's right.
And so that's
where this is King's North.
Yeah. Like that's where the recession piece of like, okay, what if we don't always grow? Like there's space of a deeper level of dependence on God. And that's really what kind of like, this is a lead into for us is like, when it comes to like the greedy ways we kind of hoard our stuff and money and experiences and whatever else, our homes, our food, we don't make room at our tables,
right?
Because it feels so costly.
Right, it's expensive.
But that's exactly where God wants to meet us, and where we might get more of Him and find in that process that maybe God is enough. In some ways, I'm not saying you don't need money and things.
Right, right.
And,
no, I know you're not.
But you have God in a different sort of way.
Right.
That the Bible seems to get at time and time again. Like, this is where people meet with God, and that's why blessed are those who are poor.
Right, right.
And have need and lack, because that's where they get God.
Right. Yeah, so, the empty hand is where you find God most easily, not the managing hand, not the, I totally agree.
And so it's critical for us in a place of growth then, where everything is about growth and everything's about optimization of that growth. Our very bodies become the lived experience of that pursuit, mm-hmm. Which we kind of just talked about. So how then do we live? So in the sermon, like you initially challenged us to fight, mm-hmm. to get your guards up.
Right.
Like we're being pummeled in the corner and
Put up your dukes. Yeah.
We're putting our hands up and we're like, there's a defense part of this posture. So like tease that out. What does that look like for us?
Well, I think that, I mean, like in a very practical level, when you're assessing your spending, don't just assess up, assess down economically, socioeconomically, that you don't just look to someone in the next tax bracket, to help you discern, but you look to someone in the lower tax bracket.
This is the other, let me just put a note here for me personally, is like, this is one of the things that's hard when you actually start to move up.
Yeah.
Like,
we're in our 50s now, so we've moved up over just by natural.
Right.
Yeah.
So that moving up of whether it's like socioeconomically or just the stuff that you have, like your house is like, you maybe you don't live in the same house that you've always lived in, but you upgrade that house. Like, that's where this hits. Like, because we're pursuing that growth narrative, everything must grow. And to like have like to f- where I feel that
self-limit.
Is like, it feels really scary at the thought of like retreating back.
Right.
Like that jumping back. And this is what you're talking about going down. Like, that's a scary proposition. And it, the more you acquire, the more scary it gets, is what I guess that's the point I'm trying
to make. So we actually have a couple people in our church who have been wildly successful in their careers. And when I received an inheritance that I wanted to use not just for my family, like our for my future generations of my family, I went and talked to them. They're above tax brackets for me, but I trusted them because they're not members of the clubs. They're not, they could all afford all of that. They live in the houses they lived in 30 years. They have raised their families in theirs and they could upgrade every single time. And I talked to them and one of them said to me, don't drastically change your lifestyle. And I have...
Yeah, that's a good word.
Don't drastically change your lifestyle because you were content before. And are you trying to build wealth for your grandkids? You know, are you trying to do that? Are you giving away generously? All those things. And I mean, you could, if I won't name those folks, but if you saw what their giving was, not just our church, that's probably minuscule to what they give in this city. You would realize they're playing a different game. And I want to be a part of that game. That game is actually more exciting because the reverse side of putting your dukes up is the stuff I said about an imagination for getting rich for the kingdom. Yeah. You know, I was create Pinterest boards and like figure out like how to dream.
Yeah.
It was my whole Madame Blueberry thing where she was like, don't be a grumpy berry is not a legitimate motivating reality.
Right.
It's like, how do we use our wealth and the blessings we do get? Like, let's get real creative about that and get excited about it. Because I think that's the real...
And there's some reality that, Georgia, like it, in our role as pastors, that sometimes we get to experience that more maybe than some in our congregation do.
Yeah.
That people do like utilize the ways that they've been blessed and they become our benefactors in some ways, right? Like they bless us in some really special and profound ways through like letting us use their beautiful homes or second homes for a week. And so there's these like for pastoral retreats or for personal retreats or just for your family vacation or whatever. Like we both experienced things like that in our years of ministry. And there is some really good things that come from that. So you talked about defense. You talked about going down as one way you put up your dukes. Mm-hmm. Another way of putting up your dukes is like being kingdom minded with regards to the income that you do have, which means there's a generosity of spirit and sharing and like using that for. I want to kind of touch upon a thing I think that would be pressure filled for maybe if you're younger listening to this, because. Mm-hmm. I think there's a growing thing that at least I'm seeing in the things that I read and come across is like, one, the idea of an inheritance mm-hmm. being used to bless your future children. Mm-hmm. So whether that's education or you're going to have a lump sum of money that you're going to give them, you know, when they graduate from college, help them buy a house or whatever.
Right, right.
All those things are good things. So I'm not poo-pooing that those are not good things to do. However, what I want to touch upon is like in the world of the machine, this like idea, like another one would be, if you start investing now, kids, and I've had this conversation with my own children because I've never been much of an investor, but I was like, hey man, if you just put this much money away each year, mm-hmm. again, with the assumption of this growth idea, mm-hmm. then when you're 50,
right, you're not going to be in my situation.
You're going to have $4 million in the bank.
Right.
Think about that reality. Right. So this is the hard part of this, I think, mm-hmm. because there is this inherent pressure to live into the machine in these sorts of ways, even for the good.
Right.
Like, think of the good you can do, you know, with all that money. And those are all truisms.
Right.
But the assumption continues to be that growth is the way. It's the way to... I want to be the benefactor, not the one needing the benefits.
Yeah,
The benevolence.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be the... So you're a young person listening to this, or... you know, a young person in Redeemer, and there's a lot of inherent pressure I've felt in a shame-based way. Is like, well, that's not going to be me or my kids or my grandkids. Yep. Partly because of my own foolishness and my own greed, but also partly just because of the nature of what I do. And
Right. So you're,
I live below the poverty line most of my adult life.
Right. Absolutely.
Like, there's some realities of that.
Yeah. Qualified for WIC.
Yeah, right.
Done that.
All that stuff. And so, like, the pressure feels almost like, what am I going to do if this isn't my story?
Right.
But what I want you to hear in that is like, that is buying into a system of the machine and of greed as very nature that isn't necessarily bad, but is forming and shaping your heart in some way and putting pressure on you that this is the good life. The good life for you, G, would have been to have your stuff together and be able to do this for your children.
Right.
But what if that's not the good life?
Right.
Like, what if the legacy we provide is not simply an inheritance from a purely material, physical money that could do lots of good things in the world?
Right.
This is why this is so hard to talk about.
Right, totally.
But the legacy we provide is something more than that. That can only be gotten to with less when you're not achieving those things.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that's absolutely true. I think that the pressure, you hear these like stats about this may be the first generation that doesn't make more than their parents. That is a mammon growth.
Correct.
Deal.
And there's shame attached to that reality.
There's shame attached to that. Whether it's the government that's not doing it right, or it's we're not doing it right, or Gen whatever we're in now is, you know, too much on their phones, whatever it is. And the truth is, this is where I think Kings North is really important, is that he talks about living in the limits of the earth and ourselves and the communities we live in. And he talks about, like,
this is also one of our values, Redeemer, like just embracing our limits.
Embracing our limits.
Is understanding that the harvest doesn't come every year and the land has to lay fallow.
Yeah.
And we don't, you know, prune to the edges of our fields. I know that's not the right word, but like we have to embrace some level of limits.
And it is so
this is a way, right? This
is
a way to fight back. Like, even in like some very simple ways of embracing limits.
Yeah.
Like, what would it look like for us, Redeemer, to like take that charge to like reality, not just with our bodies
right.
and taking Sabbath and resting, but also with our money and our property and our stuff. Like we are embracing our limits of that. You didn't mention this, and we're kind of nearing the end, but you didn't mention this in the sermon, but I think another way to put up our dukes is to be grateful.
Yes.
That gratitude is a virtue mm-hmm. in the face of greed. Like often our greed is, again, driven by things more that push us away from gratitude.
Yeah, I think that I did not mention that I probably left three pages on the floor for that. But
how does gratitude help us fight?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, this is everything from when you take a walk or you get in your car and it starts, or you, our first house had this bathroom that had just the classic old 1930s tile on it, and it had a really cool sink, and it wasn't even the bathroom that was tied to our bedroom. But I like to go potty in that bathroom more than any place else because it had this kind of historic, I don't know why that and not a great living room or anything else had, but I felt grateful for it every single time. Mm-hmm. And that made me go that like, I just felt grateful for it. I think that like just, and this is like, I mean, this is kind of old school, but counting your blessings mm-hmm. is like, can you believe that we get to go to the grocery store mm-hmm. and get
there's
food?
There's an orientation with that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that I did not achieve this.
No.
That somebody, you know, Gladwell's idea is like anybody who's had any level of a success, there's always an outlier that created the potential for them to reach that success.
Exactly.
And that there should be a gratitude, even if you're a secular person listening to this, like there's gratitude in that outlier.
Yes.
Of course, we would attribute those things to God and his providence
right.
and the way he cares for us. But there is a other orientation that is meant to help our hearts that go, what do I have that has not been given to me?
I think I got at this when I was saying, think of all the things that he could have done with his bumper crop mm-hmm. Instead of building bigger barns.
Yep.
I was like,
he
could have thrown a big party for the entire community.
Yeah.
He could have, I mean, I even did like some socioeconomic stuff or economics. Yep. I was like, well, he could also done like land sharing and like means of production.
Yeah.
Like we could have had everybody.
Yeah, that was good.
And that's what it is like, you didn't earn this. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a self-made man or woman. This is all ridiculous.
Right.
There's too much mystery. Even in the God of Mammon, there's too much mystery. Right. And so God's working through that. Right. And so you're like, okay.
And in the text, that is the like soft, like you talked about this and it goes on further.
Yeah.
Is like, why do we not have to be anxious?
Yeah.
Look at the birds.
Look at the birds. Look at the grass.
There's a gratitude even in that gratitude in that
all
posture.
That stuff. I've given you the kingdom. Yeah, like that's, kingdom. And that, I mean, one of my applications was read the rest of it and read it again, because that is the like, guys, you don't have to worry about this stuff. Mm. I got you. Mm. And I delight to get you in this stuff. Mm. And so when you have an abundance, that's do like I do, share it, give it away, enjoy it with others. And so I think that's, I mean, it's hugely important, and greed mammon, requires that we just build more storage units, and it's an unsatisfactory, unlife-giving and deadly way of being.
Yeah.
And the way of the kingdom is this beauty of open hand and open hands to receive and to give away. And we gotta like, that's not natural. So we gotta like ask Jesus and the Spirit to help us with that.
Yeah. One way to fight this might be like, okay, I'm going to practice gratitude through the act of generosity, and you find one small way to start to be generous with that one thing.
Yeah.
So it could be sharing something that you have. It could be opening your home for a meal, but it's just a step of fighting back against our greed by being generous one thing. And then you can kind of escalate to the more precious things.
Right.
Right. Like
slowly. Yeah. It's habitual in that sense. You gotta build the habits. And literally if you can't even like come off your like time, space, money, resources, it's literally, can I write down what I'm grateful for?
Yeah.
Like I can't believe this is the kindness of God in my life. Mm-hmm. Whether it's relational or financial or stuff.
That or time.
Or like, time. Time's huge. Yeah, time is growth, money in yeah, our in the right. in mammon. So money, time is mammon. Money. It's like, yep. I can't believe I had time to talk to so-and-so. And this is like, but just to name that, I mean, everybody got all upset about Oprah's gratitude journals because it wasn't Christian enough. I'm like, please, Christians, write gratitude journals. Mm-hmm. Like, just every time you go to bed, just write five things down. Yeah. Like, this is an incredible habit.
Yeah.
For all of us, mm-hmm. is to go, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I'm just thankful. Mm-hmm. And then thankfulness, gratitude becomes. It forces itself into being gracious to others. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, if it's just, or you're like the pride guy who's like, say, I'm just so thankful that I'm not like you. Yeah, and then that we're talking about the pride sermon.
That's right.
But
I'm so glad I was born in America.
Yeah. Great.
Because the land of the free, home of the brave, and the American dream. That's that prayer.
Right.
Like there is a prayer to go, I recognize that I've been placed in a world that's still driven by the machine, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
That I've been placed in a world that does have access to certain things that maybe if I was somewhere else that I would not have access to. And I want to recognize that honestly without thinking of myself as better.
Right.
That's the key component.
And like, then the spirit will start moving in and going, so what's that mean for you?
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, what does that mean for your Iranian Christians? Yeah. What does that mean for your, you know, what does it mean for your Ukrainian Christians or your Russian Christians for that matter? Like, what does it mean? Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of like, even thinking about this, like just like teasing this out is like, if it's time and money, you know, what would it look like to go, okay, I'm going to use my vacation time for my family to go do this project to help someone else. Like that is fighting against the culture of the machine and greed. Like there's lots of different ways we could work this out. I think where I would want to end is just like a word about the anxiety that this produces in us. Like if you're listening, chances are you have had within the last month a fight about mammon or growth or time and with someone that's significant to you.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are you've shamed someone or judged someone for their use of mammon and time.
Mm-hmm.
And chances are you've lost sleep over this. The invitation to being fully alive here is not that those cares don't exist, but those cares can be given to God in such a way that they don't have to end there. And what the invitation is in letting go of mammon is to embrace a life that's already anxious. And that's what you kind of teased out in your sermon pretty well. It's like you name it like that, but it is an anxious life that we are living in.
Mm-hmm.
And what God's inviting you to is something maybe a little different where, oh, I clothe the birds and look at the fields.
Right.
And in the same way, how much more do I care for you?
Yeah, I love you much more than all that stuff.
We don't have to live in the cycle of the machine that raises our anxiety.
No.
And we all get it, but there is a better way to be fully alive.
And the beauty of the gospel is even if you fail miserably in all those things, and you are like beholden to mammon, you can repent and it's gonna be okay, even if you messed everything up. That there is life, And that's the beauty of the gospel, is that he loves you more than Solomon's glory of the birds of the field and all that stuff. Like, it's just, he's not like wringing his hands going, oh my gosh, they really messed up now. You know what I mean? He's going like, I'm inviting you to a more beautiful thing. I'm giving you the very kingdom. And so that, amen to that. That's the way forward.
Yep.
And I, only practical note I would say is find someone that you can talk to about it.
Yep. That's good.
That's it for me.
Well, thanks for tuning in. I think these, like teasing out some of these different vices is like helpful for me.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's helpful to you, our listeners. And so thanks for listening today, and we'll see you next time.